Welcome back to the Bite Me Nutrition podcast. Today, I have Aiden Muir with me. I'm saying that right, yes?
Yeah, you are saying that right, yep.
We've both got like slightly tricky last names, so I don't want to be the guy that butchers that. So I probably should have checked before we started recording. But I've got Aiden Muir from Ideal Nutrition here with me today. I'm really excited to talk to him about specifically weight cuts. You know, I know he does a lot of that stuff, so I want to get some good ideas on how to do it, maybe talk about who should and shouldn't do it, because I know that's a big part of it as well. But before we do that, who are you, what do you do, and why do you do it?
So I'm Aiden Muir. I am a dietitian. I view myself as 50% dietitian, 50% content creator. So I see, I know, around 25 to 30 clients per week, pretty big mix of just general like weight loss, IBS stuff, medical conditions. And then the other 50% are athletes with a pretty big emphasis on strength sports, so like powerlifting, Olympic weightlifting, a little bit of CrossFit. And then the other random like 30% of the clients there would in that athletes portion would be like endurance athletes or team sports. So that's the dietitian aspect. The content creator aspect, I put a lot of emphasis on Instagram. Usually I'm posting like 5 times a week. I do podcast stuff. I do blog stuff. So it's a pretty even split of time. And then the other thing that is slowly taking up more time as well is just the business side of things as well. So we are now at a team of 6, soon to be a team of 7 dietitians. So that's part of the role as well.
I can imagine that is taking up more and more of your week, definitely.
Yeah, we're doing like weekly meetings and stuff like that with like each of the individual like staff members. And I was like, I did an anonymous survey with them being like, hey, guys, cool if we drop back to fortnightly. And everybody, apart from one, and I think I know who the one is, said that they wanted to do weekly still. I was like, okay, I guess this is a good use of time.
Yeah, it is. Very big tangent. But yeah, I think you've got to catch up more often rather than less often. Like, obviously you don't want to micromanage, but I think a weekly meeting is a long way away from micromanaging.
So
that's 7 weekly meetings.
Yeah, that's up. Yeah,
that's time. Yep. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, and like, you know, we'll talk about where to find you later on, and I'll link everyone up. But if you're not following Aiden, the volume of podcasts and blogs and Instagram posts is very impressive. Not just the volume, the quality and the quantity. So definitely a really killer resource for a lot of things, especially strength sport stuff. But which I guess is one of the main reasons I wanted to talk to you today about weight cuts, you know, what they are. And I guess probably the first question, just for people who aren't really familiar with weight cuts, is the first question would be like, what sports do you work with that require a weight cut?
So the big one is powerlifting, right? So if we're looking at weight cuts, it's obviously going to be weight class sports. So we've got like combat sports, we've got powerlifting, Olympic weightlifting, and strongman. One of the reasons why I'm so in this space is because the Federation of Powerlifting I work with the most, or the two federations, are GPC and CAPO, and they have 24-hour weigh-ins, as in you weigh in 24 hours before you compete. So if somebody was going for like the 82.5 kilo weight class, they could theoretically be walking out around at like 87 kilos, cut into the 82.5, and then compete the next day at 87 kilos. But other sports will have, like, far more common in a lot of other sports or federations is a 2-hour weigh-in, where the same concept still applies, just on a smaller scale, which we will talk about.
Yeah. So predominantly for yourself, the strength sports, is that the biggest?
That's the biggest one, like heaps of powerlifters. Yeah.
And so, okay, what's the difference between, because you mentioned like walking around at 87 and dropping to 82.5, like is that, what's the difference between, have they just lost 4.5 kilos of body fat, or is there something else going on?
Yeah, so it's definitely very much something else going on. Like, realistically, we're not even trying to lose body fat during that phase. A number that I like to put out there is that a kilo of body fat contains around 7,700 calories. So it's like, we can't lose 4 times that amount in a week or whatever. But we're going to be losing a lot of water weight, food volume in the stomach, glycogen, so that's the storage form of carbohydrate. We have a lot of that in our muscles. All of those little things that aren't really body fat but take up weight, we can lose. And ideally, we do it in a way that doesn't negatively impact performance at all, or not much at all.
Yeah, Yeah, gotcha. So it's not gonna help me shred for summer. Is that what you're saying?
No,
it's...
and that's the key thing. Like I struggle with posting about this on Instagram because I whether I'm right or I'm wrong, I view my audience as very intelligent people, and sometimes I get surprised when they misinterpret something that I say. And one of the things that like is it always gets me is I will post about weight cuts. I try and make it as clear as possible that this is an acute weight cut. The entire goal of this is dropping some water weight, food weight, whatever. We are not trying to lose body fat. We're just trying to set it up so that maybe we can have a competitive advantage in sport. It's not for health, just for performance, although we try and do it in as healthy a way as possible. And every now and then, like, there will be comments from just general people looking to lose weight being like, oh, should I do this? I'm like, no, that's not what we're trying to do.
Yeah. Well, like you said, we're food volume, glycogen, and water. Like, those three things are so transient anyway, right? And are in no way linked to body fat.
Completely irrelevant. Yeah.
So here's the disclaimer. Anyone listening who, unless you are cutting for a strength sport and you are aware that any weight that you're going to lose over the next, I don't know, 2 to 7 days is temporary, this is not for you. But if you are looking to cut weight for sport, so I guess that's another good conversation as well. Is this something that everyone in a strength sport or everyone in a combat sport should do? Are there times where you would advise against it? How does that work?
Yeah, so I have a few answers to this. The gold standard answer that a lot of people should say is that you shouldn't cut for a competition unless it's the difference between winning and losing, unless it's the difference between getting a record and not getting a record. Like a lot of strength coaches will say you should only ever cut if it's for a really competitive reason or whatever, and you've got a lot of experience. I'm a little bit more pro weight cuts than other people. And one of the reasons I'm a little bit more pro weight cuts than other people is I look at it from my own perspective. I view myself as a relatively mediocre powerlifter, but I also want to see what I can achieve. I also want, like, I'm not trying to like break records. Although fun fact, I did actually get a record at this thing. We can talk about that.
What?
I got a deadlift record. Amazing. At Capo State. It's a very niche record. It's within a certain age group.
Doesn't matter.
But I'll take it. the funny thing is the age group is it's like 23 to 31. And like,
okay,
somebody beat me in that comp who was like 41 years old. But like, I still get the record in that age group. Yeah.
Love it.
But yeah, I view myself as a very mediocre powerlifter, but I'm like, I still want to see what I'm capable of achieving. And I think if I get a certain number, a certain total score, whatever you'd want to call it, in a weight class, and then I got the exact same total in a lighter weight class, I've improved on what I have. Yeah. And
for sure,
there's levels to this. And like, if somebody is like 1 kilo above their weight class, it's not much effort to drop a bit of like to drop some fiber. When people drop their fiber intake, they lose about 1% on average. That's what the research shows. If you drop quite a lot of fiber, that's not overly unhealthy to do for 2 days. That's not going to hurt performance. There's no real downside. So I take a nuanced approach to that. But then the next step is like, even though I'm more pro weight cuts than a lot of people, who shouldn't do a weight cut? And it's a lot of people who shouldn't do weight cuts. If you are very new to powerlifting, or any strength sport or anything like that, I don't think you should do a weight cut. One of the reasons is I also just think you should have a chance to experience what it feels like to feel good on comp day. And I think you should just go into a comp feeling good so you can see how you perform, because you've got a bunch of other variables that are going on. For example, you experience the hype of a crowd for the first time. Some people, that helps them perform better. Some people, it doesn't help them. It makes them feel worse or whatever. How do you know if you perform bad on a day, if it was because of the weight cut or because comp day anxiety or whatever? I think you want to experience a few things. So people who shouldn't be doing weight cuts, I think if you're very, very new to the sport. I also think if you are very far from the weight class, like we can talk percentages and stuff if you want, but like if you're very far from the weight class and there's no real good reason for making the cut, then you probably shouldn't do it, because the larger the weight cut, the more risks and downsides there are associated with it.
Yeah. I love that though. I think like, I get you've got to be going for a world record or you have no business doing a weight cut. I think that could be way too restrictive. And yeah, like you said, just nuance. Because, yeah, it's almost like, well, then why am I fueling for my training sessions? Because I'm not a professional athlete. So why would I bother? It's like, well, I kind of want to get the best out of my performance that I as an individual can
do. Yeah.
So... but yeah, like you said as well, making sure that you've at least experienced one comp. So you've got a good baseline of hey, this is how I feel without a weight cut, and let's try and get as close to that as I can with a weight cut. Yeah. And so like you said, that's kind of the two biggest differences between, I guess, sports and or federations is the timing of the weigh-in. So like the 24-hour, is it pretty much 24-hour and 2 hour? Are those
Some combat sports will have like four, but like I commonly say 24 or two is what I'm really working with.
Yeah. Yeah. And so for anyone listening, that means that you either get to weigh in 2 hours before you perform or 24 hours before you perform. And so obviously those different time frames probably fairly significantly changes what you can do.
Yeah.
How do you approach those two, or how do those two differ for you?
So we'll start with the 2 hours. So with 2 hour, I'm obviously a lot more conservative, right? We always work backwards from what would hurt somebody's performance. So the fiber thing I talked about, not going to hurt anyone's performance, right? If you can drop 1% body weight without doing anything that hurts performance, let's start there. Going low carb reduces our body weight through reducing glycogen, which has physical weight. Like, let's just chuck a round number out there. Like, a lot of people can store around 0.5 kilo of glycogen. So if we went low carb, we could get near zero. Like, we could drop that significantly. But every gram of glycogen, we usually store around 3 mil of water alongside that. So it's not actually 500. It's about 1.5. It gets a bit more complex when you go down that rabbit hole, but like, I'm just going to keep that simple. But with the 2 hour weigh-in, it depends on the sport you're doing, being like, how much does that affect performance? If I get a powerlifter and I took them completely low carb and we didn't replenish any of that, that probably would affect performance a little bit. But if we use another sport like a combat sport or rowing or anything else like that, like a two hour window is not enough to replenish glycogen to get back to peak performance. So the other thing with dehydration through drinking less water or sweating or whatever you would want to do, we've got really solid research that if people are more than 2% dehydrated, as in their body weight has dropped by more than 2%, just to chuck numbers to make that clearer, if somebody's dropped from like 100 kilos down to 98 kilos through dehydration, their performance gets worse. In strength sports, we see that they get weaker. In team sports and stuff like that, we see that like their passes become less accurate. Like, we can see some pretty clear like differences. So my rule is like, we want to get back to at least within 2%, ideally get back to 100% of where we previously weighed, if dehydration is a tool that we use. But that therefore means for a 2 hour weigh-in, we could drop like 1 or 2% of body weight through that, and then we've got enough time to rehydrate that. With 24 hours, this is when you've got a lot of leeway. I think it's a bit dumb that 24-hour weigh-ins exist. That's just my own personal opinion. But it's like, you can send it in terms of dropping a lot of body weight. So to put context around this, a lot of research on 4-hour weigh-ins in combat athletes, because there's a lot more research on combat sports than there is on powerlifting, partly because there's more money in combat sports. But research on combat athletes shows that people can drop about 4% body weight the week of, as in they weigh 4% more than they did at weigh-in, and then get back to peak performance, etc. They can drop 4% for a 4-hour weigh-in and get back to peak performance. Do I truly believe that there's zero loss in performance? I don't truly believe that, but the research can't find a difference. If that's the case, what can we do over 24 hours?
Yeah.
I don't have a good answer, but like the glycogen stuff I talked about, if you got 24 hours, you could go low carb and get back to pretty much peak glycogen stores. The hydration thing, I like to think of it as we can usually rehydrate about 1 kilo per hour to a certain degree. That's how did I come up to that number? We can talk about that at another time, but like, about 1 kilo per hour, but it's like 24 hours. It's like, obviously we're going to get back to where we want to be. And chucking some numbers out there, like, I think people can probably do about 8 to 10% of body weight with no loss of performance, but it's very not fun to do that. Like, it's just, it's pretty brutal. Savage. Yeah. And like, I don't know, using some personal numbers, like I've experimented with this myself. I've done quite a few 5% weight cuts and I'm like, oh, that didn't hurt my performance. For a recent comp last year, I did an 8% weight cut myself. And the last like 1 or 2 kilos, as I said, weren't overly fun, but I performed on the day at the top end of what my expectations would have been. And that's really got me thinking, because I haven't pushed any athlete really beyond that 8%, although I've seen other athletes go beyond 8%, seen some go beyond 10%. I'm like, hang on, with my personal experience, if I performed at the top end of my expectations after an 8%, how far would I have to go before it hurts my performance? And that got me thinking, for me personally, the limiting factor for me is the not fun aspect more so than the performance aspect.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah. So just the suckiness of that sort of, well, yeah, the preparation for that.
Yeah.
That weigh in.
Like using examples like that, that's at the upper end, but like the thing that I didn't really anticipate is like the last 2 days are obviously that's when you're most dehydrated and everything like that. I didn't really sleep well the last night before the weigh-in, and the large, and it was a 24-hour weigh-in, but like the large aspect of that, you know that feeling when you wake up in the middle of the night, you're really thirsty, and when you drink that water, it's like the best tasting water in the world.
Yes. Oh no, but
I had that feeling, but I couldn't drink.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so rough. That sucks. But like, that's what I mean about the not fun aspect. And it's like for a like 3 to 5% wake up, you'd never experience that, right? Because you wouldn't need to. But for a 8%+, which I don't really recommend to people, but like if somebody's going to do that, you start to experience some of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I imagine as well the 8%+, it would be, you know, this isn't an ad, but probably better to work with someone to manage that. Probably don't do that for your first weight cut.
That's actually factors. Like, I know it's not an ad, but like that's like we both have a similar philosophy. We just try and put out good information. We don't really market ourselves too heavily or anything like that, because like whatever comes of it comes from it. It's worked pretty well for both of us. But like with the weight cuts thing, why I talk about it a bit is because nobody's going to do it this well for themselves, right? Like nobody's going to plan it out that well. Like I see people doing a lot of dumb stuff, like just going through some dumb stuff. Like there's people who do like active sweating. Like this isn't super dumb, right? But like just using this as an example, they'll do active sweating the day before a weigh-in where they're doing some form of exercise to sweat, to weigh in lighter. And using powerlifting as an example and other sports this would apply to, you go through an entire peak, structure your training perfectly, you intentionally deload to get rid of the fatigue that you've gone through. And now you're doing something that's fatiguing to make weight, when it's like, well, we could have dropped fiber, carbs, all these things that won't hurt performance, rather than the thing that could hurt performance a little bit. Mm.
Yeah. It's, I think, well, in terms of the coming back to the, I guess, pushing that 8% to 10%, like I find like a lot of strength athletes, they're just built a little different. Hey, they're wired a bit differently mentally. And
yeah,
I don't mean that critically, but in terms of if you're like, hey, you can get over 8% body weight loss, but it's going to suck a bit. I feel like a lot of them would be like, okay, bring it on, you know, similar to why they're doing active sweating 24 hours before weigh in. Cause it sucks, but it's, they don't care. Right.
Yeah. Because, and that's where it gets interesting with like how I said, the limiting factor is that it's not fun or whatever, but it's like, what if somebody was on for a record and they're like, this is what I want to do? It's like, well, let's make this as good as we can. Like, let's make this as, it's not going to be healthy, but like, let's make it as healthy as we can. It's not going to be fun, but totally, let's make it as easy as it can be.
Yeah. Well, I guess like health is such a interesting, because like, I would argue that no sports performed at their peak are healthy.
Yeah, right? I agree.
Like really, like running 42 kilometers is not quote unquote healthy. Neither is, you know, maxing out on, yeah. So exactly like you said, you want to minimize harm, right? Mm-hmm. Understanding that there's harm involved, but there's definitely degrees that you can minimize that. So I guess for 24-hour weigh-in, are we looking at 5% body weight drop? And again, this is going to vary individual, but 5% body weight is like a reasonable expectation, should be fairly cruisy.
I think so, yeah. If I'm working with an athlete long-term, I like to, like 5% is a number that I like. I call that a reasonable expectation, everything like that. I like to start with like a 3 to 4% one for the first time somebody does it, because I'm like, that will give them a little bit of competitive advantage, but I want people to have a good experience. I just want to kind of show them, I'm like, hey, we do this, won't hurt performance, everything like that. Then I'll trial like 5. And then it's kind of a game of being like, let's just push the threshold a little bit until we find what we don't want to do anymore. Either it hurts performance or we decide we don't want to do it. But like 5 is a pretty good starting point. And one of the downsides of me documenting my experience with my weight cut is there's been a few people who have reached out to me being like, oh, I want to start with 8. And I'm like, everybody I've worked with long term, I will trial lower things first. Because everyone has a bit of an individual response. Like if somebody does 5 and there's no downside, they feel all right doing it, there's nothing, it's like, then maybe we can do a little bit more. Whereas there could be some other people who struggle with 5 right off the bat as well.
Yep. So yeah, so you don't want to jump them, slam them straight to eight.
Yeah. And like this is a separate topic as well, but like one of the things I would touch on with this is like, is this easier for men versus women? And what I mean by that is, how does the menstrual cycle play into this? Like, one of the interesting things is like all the studies that reference like the 4% no loss of performance, etc., it is done on men. And I don't have a great answer to the question, but it's like, if a woman is at a certain time of her menstrual cycle, is there a chance that it's harder to get that last few percent off than a guy? I don't have a good answer to that, but it is food for thought that if I do chuck out a number being like 5% or something like that, that somebody might try that and they're like, oh, that was actually brutal to get to because it was actually a little bit harder than we expected.
Yeah. 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 The menstrual, I've had athletes like just in the worst time in their cycle for weight, like,
yeah, exactly,
the day of comp, right? Yeah. Like, it's, and there's nothing you can do about that. That's biology, yeah, and that's life. But like, yeah, that definitely would.
Yeah. Would, so everything I'm talking about is like averages when I say that 5%. That's the caveat, just being like, sometimes 5% is pretty comfortable, sometimes it's not comfortable.
Totally. And so again, same caveat, but for a 24-hour weigh-in, do you have a percentage that you'd kind of start at there?
Yeah, actually, I should be clearer. So like with the 2 hours.
24, sorry, I meant two.
Yeah, so that was, okay. Yeah, so you got me. So yeah, so like for 24, yeah, 5%. For two, I like to do just like two or three, but that's what I start at. One stat that I do chuck out there, though, that I try to chuck out there to make people a little bit more open to these kind of numbers is that, so IPF, you could call it the gold standard of drug-tested powerlifting. At IPF Worlds, so they do a two-hour weigh-in, and this is the best of the best, theoretically. Somebody put together a study where they measured people's body weights 1 week out for the competition, and then they measured what they weighed in at. And they did this for everybody who got medals, and the average weight difference was 5%, as in people weighed 5% more on average than what they weighed in at, which therefore means at IPF Worlds, for a two-hour weigh-in, the average person who got a medal did a 5% weight cut, which therefore means there's some people who did more, there's some people who did less. And that doesn't mean it's the best way to go about it, but that is what people are doing. And that's why when I start conservative at like 2-3%, because if we go back to that blanket statement of like, there will be certain coaches who are completely anti-weight cut, I'm like, well, at IPF Worlds, everyone's doing 5%. It's like, that's the average for the people who win medals.
Yeah. That's a pretty solid study population, right? Like you said, IPF Worlds, best of the best in tested powerlifting with a 2 hour weigh-in. Like, it's hard pressed to find a better sample.
Yeah. Okay. I like to start with like 2%, 2-3%, just because I'm like that fiber thing. I'm like, that's 1% there. If we drop a bit of carbs, not go crazy, we'll drop a little bit there. And if we restrict fluid a little bit, like you just drink what you normally do, but like 20% less or something like that, maybe you drop some food volume alongside the fiber. We say maybe a little bit less vegetables, because vegetables are great, but it's not going to help our performance in the next like day or so. We can drop 2-3% pretty much guaranteed without any loss of performance.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to ask about the fiber thing, like, so low residue. Why does that work and why does it not impact performance?
Yeah. So I don't have
the degree of other things.
The best explanation for why it works out to be like 1% is just like decreasing food weight in the gastrointestinal tract. Like, that's why it's doing it. There's probably a better explanation for that, because like one of the overly simplistic ways I look at it is like, we eat 30 grams of fiber per day. How is dropping this like dropping more than 30 grams? But it's like a compounding effect of other stuff in there. But why doesn't it affect performance? Because it's like, it is just undigested like food weight or digested food weight, however you want to look at it. What's going to affect performance? How much glycogen we've got, how hydrated we are, our electrolyte status, all of those things are going to affect performance. But having less food volume in our digestion won't affect performance.
Isn't those things? Yeah. Would that be the first place you'd start? Like the first tool you'd implement?
Yeah, I think that would be the first place I'd start with a lot of people. It's such an easy win. And the same thing with that food volume thing I talked about. Like theoretically, if somebody eats 2,500 calories per day, we could continue eating 2,500 calories per day just with less food volume as well.
Mm. Yeah. And is that literally like grams on the plate?
Yeah. So like, cool. Exactly. So yeah, it's like if somebody ate that 2,500 calories coming from a kilo to a kilo and a half of food, that's probably a bad example. But like using that example, you could cut it down to like 750 grams kind of thing. And theoretically that would be like oversimplified, but they've lost like just under a kilo just through that kind of change already.
Totally. And then, yeah, like you said, we're not changing their calorie intake. You could probably even keep their macronutrient intake the same. So
the other like little hack I've got as well is like if we're dropping somebody's carbs, like say I've got a 24 hour weigh-in and I have somebody going low carb from say 5 days out, like quite low carb, I don't really want them to be in a massive calorie deficit for 5 days, particularly if I do, like sometimes I do 7 days. So an alternative to that is increasing fat correspondingly. So like the technical equation would be like for every 45 grams of carbs you drop, you add 20 grams of fat because that comes out as the same amount of calories. So that way they're still consuming the same amount of calories. They're not in this huge deficit, but they're also going to be dropping glycogen weight and water weight associated with that.
Side note, everyone, that's why the ketogenic diet looks like it works really quickly.
Exactly.
You're just dropping water. You're just dropping water. But for the purposes of this, where it's not about fat, it's about weight. That's, you know, it's perfect. Cool. So yeah, would you say low residue / low fiber / food volume, and then looking at maybe carbohydrate manipulation, and then is hydration status kind of the more, I don't know, aggressive or the last thing that you
kind of the last thing. And like, it is a thing that I could use, because like that example I use about like drinking 20% water, like it's not an issue really. If somebody normally drinks based on their thirst and we go a little bit less, like, but like that is the last thing. The one thing I haven't touched on is sodium. So I should have touched on this earlier, but sodium / salt helps us hold on to water. A great example of this is when you go out for dinner and you wake up heavier the next day, there's a few explanations. One's the food volume, two is the carbohydrates and everything I talked about. But a third thing is that any decent chef is probably adding a decent amount of salt to their food. So you absorb and hold on to water quite a bit better. A great example of that is like when you're literally at the restaurant, you eat the food and you get thirstier than normal. So you drink more water than normal and you hold on to more of that water. This goes both ways. If you drop salt down to quite low levels, you excrete water more readily. Your body's not holding on to it as well. I probably a bit too much for this, but I do a bit of a thing where I get people to go high sodium for a little bit and then drop their sodium 2 days out, because there's a bit of a lag effect in our hormones where if we go high sodium, it's like our body gets used to having that much salt on board. So the hormones basically revolve around the assumption that we're having this much salt coming in, that's going to help us hold on to water. Let's excrete water at this rate based on the fact that we've got this much salt coming in. And then when you drop the sodium, it kind of makes it so that you lose water a little bit more easily.
Yeah. Yeah. So you keep excreting water at that higher rate before the body catches up.
Yeah. So it's not a huge thing, but it is one thing that makes it a little bit easier if you do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. And so why is hydration the last thing that you'd
just because that 2% kind of rule, just because that 2% rule where it's kind of like if somebody's more than 2% dehydrated, we clearly see changes in performance. And because we're not black and white thinkers, we are nuanced thinkers. 2% is where we see the differences in the research. But like, does that not mean that 1%, like we're just not measuring the changes as effectively?
I doubt it's nothing and then it falls off a cliff, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So like that's why I view it through that lens, being like, that's where we start seeing clear differences, et cetera. But it's like, well, maybe there's some differences at 1%. So like, that's why water's the last thing. And it's also like the least pleasant in a way. And it's also one of the ones that's harder for people to embrace as easily, like from that kind of health perspective. Because somebody's like, oh, if I drop fiber for a day, it doesn't really matter. If I decrease sodium, that doesn't really matter, if I have a little bit less carbs. But the water one is like, well, we want to be well hydrated kind of thing.
Yeah, which I find kind of funny. I don't know if funny is the right word, but I feel like that's the first anyone doing their own water weight cut is
exactly
what is the first thing they cut.
Yeah
instead of actually there's all these other really easy.
And that's once again why I push this whole weight cut like thing, because I'm like, if somebody's doing it themselves, that is the first thing. And I'm like, if we have a structured plan, it's not necessarily the first thing.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I've had heaps of clients who just don't even reach that point. You know, you do the math and you're like, oh, you need 3%. And they're like, so when do I cut water? I was like, well, we probably don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. So, my headphones have just died for anyone listening. So I apologize in advance for the annoying pause. Where are we? Cool. Good to go. I think on that note, though, I feel like that's probably most of the questions that I wanted to ask. Oh, I guess one other big thing would be post weigh-in, do you have any kind of tips for what I should be doing, or me, I'm not doing one, what people should be doing to rehydrate and refuel as effectively as they can in that window?
Yeah, that's actually a huge one. And I think that's the other kind of competitive advantage we have in a way, being like, particularly for those shorter weigh-ins, how do we rehydrate effectively? So the first thing is obviously we've got to rehydrate fluid. Or I suppose like listing it off, we've got to rehydrate fluid, electrolytes, and carbohydrates. And the goal, one, is to rehydrate things in a way that gets us back to theoretical peak performance, but also gets us feeling good as well. So with the fluid thing, a starting place I'd start off with is understanding that, one, we can only absorb so much fluid per hour. A rough guideline is that our kidneys can filter through about a liter per hour. So that therefore means if you're thirsty enough to drink 2 liters in the first hour, you probably shouldn't still do that. Like, you should probably still just stick to around 1 liter. Larger people can go a bit higher, smaller people a little bit lower, but there's not these huge differences because it's still based on kidney function. If you drink it all at once, you do not absorb as much as if you sip it over the course of an hour. So I would sip on about a liter per hour for the first couple of hours. If we have carbohydrates alongside that, and if we have sodium alongside that, we absorb that even better. Like, we've seen this from studies where they compare drinking milk after training versus water after training, and we see people drinking milk absorb a bit more of the fluid because of that carbohydrate and that sodium. So like, those are some key things. And like, just for like thinking it through, if you went higher than that, you would just go to the bathroom more, basically. You wouldn't be absorbing any more. And maybe there's a bit of an argument that you'd be absorbing less if you did that, but that's a bit of a different topic. The exact protocol I have personally, and there's variations of this, but what I get people to do is I get people to have around 500 to 600 mil of Gatorade. I get them to have 250 mil of Hydrolite. I have a protein shake, so that's another 250 mil. So that has protein in there and some creatine in that. Because although it's not doing a lot, it will help them hold on to a little bit more water in that acute time frame. And I have them sip on that, like obviously individually, but I have them sip on that over the course of an hour. And then if it's a bigger weight cut, then the next hour we do it. I haven't had anyone send it, but if I had somebody do 10%, I'd do it for 4 hours. If I have somebody who's just done like a 2 or 3%, I just have them do it for 1 hour. And then the next step is we go on to food. And we basically just want to go relatively high carb. For a powerlifter, we don't need a carb load, right? I might get them to have 4 grams per kilogram of body weight or something like that, maybe a little bit higher if they want to. But for somebody who is, say, a rower, and if they had a long distance, I'd go higher. But the goal at that stage is just to feel good. And a metric I like to give people is to get back to roughly their original body weight. We don't need to overshoot that. Some people turn it into a game where they're like, how heavy can I get? Like, using that, like, say somebody started 104 kilos and they cut down to like 99.8 to weigh in or whatever. Some people will end this process at like 107 because they're just like, how much can I eat? Whereas like, is that helping more performance more at that stage? Like, you probably would have performed equally well at, say, 104 in that example, but risked any chance of like feeling bloated or whatever, which could hurt performance.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I can, again, powerlifters with being built different, I can definitely see the appeal of like, oh, where did you end up? Where did I? Gained. I was 3 kilos over. Yeah. Oh man, anyway, conversation for another day. But yeah, that's fantastic. So I think we've got a really good idea of the different strategies we can use and the different almost compartments of weight that those impact, how it differs from 2%. I got plovers going mental behind me, how that differs from a 2 hour weigh-in versus 24 hour weigh-in, who shouldn't do a weigh-in, why you should almost certainly work with someone to do a proper weight cut. I think, yeah, is there anything I've missed or anything else you'd like to add around weight cuts that we need to be mindful of?
No, I think so. And like, I think that's fine. The one thing I double down on with the working with other people is even when you know stuff, like sometimes it still makes sense to have accountability, etc. for this kind of stuff. Like, I said I've done quite a few 5% weight cuts and then one 8% weight cut. For the 8% one, I documented on Instagram. So I was like, oh, damn, I've actually got to do the protocol and stuff like that because I'm putting this out there. But like for the 5%, even though I know what I know, I didn't do it that way. Like I did like cut water a little bit more and stuff like that. Like obviously I use some of the tools I use, but I wouldn't do the water load that I normally do with a client. I didn't do the sodium load or anything like that. I just did like the last 2 days really of my kind of protocol. And I know that if I worked with somebody else and they were doing it for me, they wouldn't have structured it exactly the way I would want it to be structured, if that makes sense. And I think an outside perspective is pretty useful. Whenever you're doing anything that's kind of an aggressive approach or anything like that, I think an outside perspective is useful.
Yeah, that impartial third party. Hey,
yeah,
can't beat it. Well, look, the last question I was going to ask you was meant to be a bit of a joke because I was going to ask, why don't you pull conventional? Why do you pull sumo? But you kind of answered that at the beginning with this, the record. What the hell?
Yeah. So, yeah, I saw that in the show notes and it actually made me laugh. Why don't I pull conventional? So I'm all right at pulling conventional. Like I've done 180 for 6 conventional and that was like at the end of a session, so I'm like, maybe I could do more. I just haven't really tried, but like the reason why is because I pulled conventional for 4 years and then the first time I pulled sumo I pulled a PB and I was like, okay, maybe I'm just built for sumo. Like that's simple. With the record, yeah, so I had no idea. Hey, like I said, as I said, I was doing that 8% weight cut just like for the experience, etc. Because I work with a lot of people who I do 5% weight cuts with. But I'm like, anybody I'm working with, like I want to experience some of this stuff. Like I've experimented with other stuff. Like I've done keto, I've done fasting, I've done vegan diets. None of them like are appealing to me and I haven't done it because I thought it would be better or whatever. I've just done it to like get a bit of experience and stuff like that. But and none of those were funny, if I'm being honest. But the weight cut was kind of to do that. And like I learned kind of stuff from doing stuff. Like the example I used for that sleep thing, like that's something that I learned. I was like, if I'd never experienced that, I wouldn't be like, oh, like, and other things like you get headaches when you do a weight cut if it's a bigger one. So it's like, well, now I know to recommend Panadol to people. Like that's basic, but I learned by doing. But yeah, with the record, so I did a 235 kilo deadlift. Felt good. Felt like more was there. And it's got me thinking, maybe I should do another comp. Was in the 75 kilo weight class and powerlifting, as you know, but the listeners might not know, is it's very segregated. There's like 5 or 6 different federations. And I think Capo may have changed their weight classes at some time in the last 10 years, which therefore means there's not a lot of people who have competed in this weight class. Because I'm not an overly large person to start off with, like I normally walk around at say like 80 kilos or something like that. And I think it was like 81 kilos leading into this. I competed in the under 75 kilos. Powerlifting is not a sport where men who are 75 kilos, unless they're really short, really take to the sport. Usually it's like larger people. So I competed in a specific federation, in a specific weight class, in a specific age, even though you'd think like 23 to 31 is like a pretty like competitive age. And that's how I got a state record. And when they sent it to me, I was like, is this a joke? Like, is this actually a record? But I'm happy either way.
Mate, too many caveats behind that. You should have just said, yeah, my latest meet, you know, I pulled 235, which was a state record. End of sentence. Don't need all that other stuff. Just...
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's not something like, I don't know. I've always viewed it as like, I reckon you could get a random rugby league player, get him to do 6 months of training on deadlifts and they could do that kind of thing. Like, I don't think of it as a great achievement or anything like that, but I do rate it. I'm like, that's sick. I didn't think I'd ever get records. That's cool.
Is that on the wall next to your degrees? Because that's where I would be putting it.
No, it's actually not. My staff, so there's a few people at Valhalla who call me the GOAT, like the greatest of all time in terms of dietitians. And my staff at the Christmas party got me a picture of a goat where they put my head on it. And that's on my wall in the office at home.
That's fair. That's
so
that's
like, if I was going to do it, I'd put it record next to that. Yeah.
Look, my main takeaway from that was you're going to compete again. That's what I heard. I think we all heard it, right?
It's a maybe. I'm prepping for a half marathon right now because some of my team are doing that. And I'm like, maybe I compete, but then I don't know. It's tough to do both. It's tough to get better at both, you know? Yeah.
Hybrid athlete.
hybrid athlete. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. And yeah. basketball on top of that too. So it's like, I'm all over the place with training right now.
Yeah. Oh, it's good that, like, I mean, I think like most people, it's nice to mix it up, right? It can get a bit tedious doing the same thing over and over, which unfortunately is what you need to do to excel at stuff. So.
Yeah. And powerlifting's always there. Like, one of the good things about powerlifting, like, as I said, that guy, like, was like 41. It's better than me. Like, I don't know, like basketball, I want to play that until I can't, but there's a finite window there, whereas powerlifting's got a bit of a longer window.
Yeah. Well, and my main takeaway is I'm going to go downstairs and try a few sumo, do some sumo.
Yeah, give it a crack. I'd love to hear it.
I've never done it, but it's...
Just send it. Look, just like, as I said, like the first time I did it, got a PB. Who knows?
All right, stay tuned, everyone. That's it's coming next. We'll look, getting back to what we're supposed to be, what we're supposed to be talking about, landing the plane. Thank you so much for your time, because it's been killer to get that detail around weight cuts. They can be, like we've said, everyone who's done them themselves has probably done something less than ideal, if you'll pardon the pun. And so I think it's really good to think about the different areas that we can attack, the order that we should probably be attacking them, and also, you know, thinking about your sport and the window that you have to refuel and rehydrate, and taking that into consideration. And so, like I said right at the top of the show, like I said, Aiden and the team post a ton of, like, the volume of content and the quality of content is like, hats off to you, sir. There's constant blogs and podcasts and posts coming out. So if for some strange reason you're listening to this, I don't think there'll be too many people, but if you happen to be listening to this and you're not following them on the various places I'll get Aiden to list off, make sure you go and check these guys out. I will link all of these links in the show notes, but where's some of the good places to find you guys?
So Instagram is my main one. So that is Aiden_the_dietitian. The blog is Ideal Nutrition. So that's easy. And then the podcast is the Ideal Nutrition Podcast as well.
Awesome. Like I said, I'll link to all of those places in the show notes below. But otherwise, man, thanks so much for coming on, sharing your weight cut expertise and your state record. It's been a blast.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. I'll catch you next time. Bye.